Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
At Progressive, we know there's nothing like the feeling of riding your motorcycle with your buddies on the open road. It's a potent cocktail of thrills, laughter, and pure adrenaline. A feeling that would be impossible to recreate on the radio. Until now. Hit it, sound effects guy.
I'm real proud of you, son.
Well, that was terrible. Our apologies for even trying. Quote with Progressive and see if you could save with America's number one motorcycle insurer. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
Good music is what we want to hear.
What do you mean, good music?
It's what we dance to, what our children will dance to. And if you don't want to play it, then take your records and go home.
Did you have a band? Good or bad?
It's a great band. It's a bad band. It's like pizza, baby. It's good no matter what. There's music in the air.
Welcome to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. I'm Jim DeRogatis, the pop music critic at the Chicago Sun-Times.
And I'm Greg Kot. I write about rock and roll for the Chicago Tribune. Today on the world's only rock and roll talk show, Jim and I welcome one of the most talked about bands in indie rock. Grizzly Bear joins us for a conversation and live performance.
And later on, Greg and I'll review the new album from metal giants Slayer.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and now it's time for some music news.
Mr. Kot, as you know, it is a well-known fact that Google would like to control pretty much everything in media. You know, they want to be the new newspapers. They want to be the new cartographers giving us maps. They want to go into the music business. A week or so ago, they rolled out a new feature which will enable people doing a Google search. I refuse to use the word Googling. Just not a good verb. People doing a Google search for a band will now get among the first three or four listings click-throughs that will bring them to hearing a full track by that group. This is an initiative, in part, I think, to tackle Apple's hugely popular iTunes store, because the second click after sampling this track would be to one of a number of sites that will enable you to buy the track. Google would like to get into the music business in a big way, bigger than just hosting links to bands' web pages, which are now further down on that list of initial sites, or lyrics to songs, Wikipedia entries, that sort of thing. They want to get into bringing music to people.
Without a doubt, Google is becoming a major player in the music business, as it is in all other forms of media. And it's exciting news for a lot of artists who are figuring out, you know, how are we going to get paid for our music? What's fascinating to me is we had this hierarchy in the late 90s of the big corporations funneling all the music out to the masses. You know, the Warner Brothers and the Sonys and the EMIs of the world, they were basically running the music business. Now we've got a new corporate hierarchy in charge of the music business.
Yeah.
Google is right up there with MySpace and iTunes, soon to be on the market, Spotify. So is it a new boss replaces the old boss kind of scenario where you've just got a different set of names and corporations running the music business? We'll find out soon.
I'm your biggest fan. I'll follow you until you love me. Bumper, bumper,
That is the one and only Lady Gaga with one of several hits she has at the moment, Paparazzi. Inexplicably, Mr. Cott, we have yet to discuss the Lady Gaga phenomena on this show. Many people are probably grateful for that. Yet, as Kai Rizdahl, our colleague, says, it's time to do the numbers. Let's take a look at what's going on the pop charts.
She's making history, Jim. We have to look at the numbers on Lady Gaga because at a time when CD sales are tanking, Lady Gaga is selling a lot of records, and she's had four number one hits in a row from her debut album, the first time that's been done in the Billboard Pop Songs history, which is a pretty big deal. Paparazzi, the fourth number one from that album, following three of your favorite songs, I know, Jim, Just Dance, Poker Face, and Love Game from that debut that was released last year, still going strong. She has a major tour planned, made a lot of news recently because that tour was originally planned as an arena tour. She was going to open for Kanye West.
Yeah.
Kanye had a few personal problems
Kanye's melting down,
dropped out. So now it's Lady Gaga's tour. Apparently, this is going to be one of the biggest spectacles ever put into a theater-sized show in the history of pop music. You know, a lot of money's going to be spent. But what a phenomenon. The last year, this goes by, you listen to that music, you think this could be like a Hilary Duff in a, singing in a sweatshirt and blue jeans and gym shoes.
It's cutesy dance pop.
You think that when you hear it, but then you look at the visuals and the videos and this upcoming tour, and it's a completely different phenomenon.
She looks like Mud Club, New York City, 1978, yeah. Avant-garde, underground, weirder than Madonna. But I don't know. I can't figure out what the appeal is, to tell you the truth.
Well, the appeal might be that every generation needs its own version of Madonna.
Britney Spears.
And Lady Gaga is it for the moment. You're right. I mean, even Britney Spears is old news right now for a lot of her fans, because a lot of her fans are probably in their late 20s, early 30s now. She began as a teen a decade ago. Lady Gaga is filling that gap. More news. We followed up on the Michael Jackson movie debut. We talked about it last week. The movie is doing gangbusters business. This is it, the documentary of the preparation and the rehearsals for what was to be his final tour.
Not to be confused with the Greatest Hits album, This Is It, or the song written with Paul Anka, This Is It.
All of those enterprises hugely successful. The movie pulled in $101 million worldwide in its first 5 days. Initially, they were talking about a two-week run. Well, that's already been extended. You knew that was
shocking,
right?
Oh, they're going to keep it in the theaters. Only 2 weeks. Ah, no, we'll keep it there.
Exactly. And then the This Is It soundtrack, which is essentially a greatest hits, topped by that one quote-unquote new song, the song co-written with Paul Anka that was basically a leftover from about 20 years ago. Nonetheless, despite the fact that they're reselling us a lot of old Michael Jackson music on this This Is It soundtrack album, it debuted at the top of the Billboard charts and sold 373,000 copies, one of the biggest selling debut weeks for any album in 2009. Don't let me down. Don't let me down. Don't let me down. Downloading, Jim, that's a word we've said a few times in this show over the last few years. A huge issue in the music industry. We're constantly trying to get new information about what kind of effect this is having on the market. What is the real impact of the fact that peer-to-peer file sharing is now the preferred method of distributing music in the world?
Yeah, because the industry as it has existed is very chicken sky-falling, you know, mm-hmm. end of the world downloading music online.
That's right. They're telling us that peer-to-peer file sharing is killing the music industry. A recent study here by a British think tank called Demos indicates that, in fact, the opposite is true, that the more people download and share music, the more they are likely to buy it. Their study found that the person who shares music files illegally, quote-unquote, is spending an average of $120 a year on music, 77 British pounds, versus $54 or 33 British pounds for those who don't download music. So in other words, what they're saying is that people who are downloading and sharing music online are getting more excited about music, are learning more about music, and are buying the stuff that they really want as part of their collection. The counter to that argument is that the British phonographic industry, the BPI as they're called, estimates that 7 million UK users are downloading music files illegally every year, and that's costing their industry $331 million annually. So they're basically saying, you know, this is costing us money. This study is saying no. In fact, the opposite is true. So in the context of these laws that are being imposed by European governments, we already see in France, they are imposing this three strikes and you're out law, basically saying that if you are downloading music and you are caught doing it three times, you're off the internet. The UK is considering a similar measure. What does this do to music sales? Well, in fact, you'll be killing your music sales if you are pulling these downloaders off the net for sharing music files.
Well, speaking of downloading, Greg, the other big story that people have been waiting for forever is when will we have access online to purchase the Beatles catalog? We saw those remastered releases a couple of months ago, got tons of coverage. You still can't go onto iTunes or any other service and download a Beatles song. However, the Beatles, AppleCore and EMI are now making available a little USB drive shaped like an apple, like the Beatles Apple record, that you can plug into your computer after you buy this thing for $330, and you will then have access to the remastered Beatles tracks from those 14 albums. So they don't have a problem with putting the music out digitally. They just seem to have a problem with selling it at an online store, which is just inconceivable. And it's one of the questions I get asked most often on my blog and via email. When am I going to be able to have access to Beatles tracks? And the answer is like, who knows? But now you can buy an apple for $330.
You are listening to Sound Opinions. A song called 2 Weeks from Grizzly Bear, their third album, Vecatimus, that came out this year. The group started rather modestly in 2004 when singer and band founder Edward Drost recorded a bunch of music on a tape recorder in his bedroom, took that project out on the road, and brought a few fellas in to play the instruments, Christopher Bear, Chris Taylor, Daniel Rawson, and the debut album, Horn of Plenty, came out in 2004, followed up by Yellow House in 2006, a big indie breakthrough for them, and then now Vecatimus, their third album, has everybody paying attention to them. Grizzly Bear's track record speaks for itself. They've opened for people like Radiohead and Paul Simon. Beyonce and Jay-Z were seen at one of their shows earlier this year.
No greater endorsement.
I mean, you talk about buzz, right? Yeah, this band has it. On a sleepy Sunday morning, that's very un-rock and roll time when we did this live interview and performance with the band, but they were kind enough to join us in front of a live audience at the House of Blues on a Sunday morning, and we began the conversation by asking lead singer Ed Drost about his musical background. You said, you know, you sort of constructed this album starting, you know, with computer technology, and yet your family has a sort of a background in music. Did you absorb any of that when you were growing up? I know your mom was a music teacher, right? And a grandparent had some pretty heavy-duty musical credentials as well.
Yeah. I did. I mean, actually, I'm the only one in the band without any formal training, so that's the funny part about it. I didn't really ever study music, and I was just around it a lot, and I went to school for journalism, and then things changed.
Right. When you started evolving the project into a live band, what were your thoughts about where this was going to go musically? Did the other guys, what did they bring to it in terms of changing the way you envisioned the way Grizzly Bear was going to sound?
There was never really any intention in the beginning to make it actually a career. It was sort of one of those things that I thought my mom and some friends would buy at Other Music, and it would be printed in like 200 copies or something, which is actually basically what happened. But we got it in our heads that we had to put together a live show, and reinterpreting those weird songs and trying to figure out a way to play them live was sort of how the band found its sound. And then Daniel brought songs in and everyone started writing together. And that's sort of where like the real band began, was sort of in trying to reinterpret those songs for a live setting.
Mm-hmm. We're going to get to the making of the new album and how that changed from the second one. But we might as well get a song from you guys. So what are you going to play for us?
I'm going to play All We Ask.
Cool.
In this old house, I'm not alone. In a bedroom, a telephone.
Grizzly Bear live on Sound Opinions from the House of Blues in Chicago. We'll have more with Grizzly Bear coming up next from Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. Then for something completely different, Greg and I turn our attention to Slayer.
Our haven on the southern point is calling us. Our haven on the southern point is calling us. And faced with all the obvious, so carry us. Avert your eyes from all of this, we'll make it all back.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. Our guests this week are the members of the band Grizzly Bear. We spoke to them in front of a live audience at the House of Blues in Chicago. You are hearing a little bit of the song Knife, a track from their breakthrough second album, Yellow House. Now they're touring on the big third record, Vecca Timist. And during our conversation, I asked lead singer Ed Drost about the evolution of Grizzly Bear's recordings. So the first album, as we said, originated pretty much as a bedroom recording, Horn of Plenty. Yellow House is beginning to have more of a band effort. But I've read interviews with you, Ed, where you were saying that you really wanted, with album number three, Vecca Timist, to see if you could write as a group, recorded in upstate New York in the Catskills. Is that right? Or to have more of a collective spirit to the album?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just what happened. Yellow House was extremely collaborative as well. It wasn't. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like there was. It was just at this point, I think we were bringing music to one another at earlier stages in the development, so that people could get involved. It wasn't like someone had a song and finished it and then was like, "Okay, this is done." It was much more like, "I have a vague idea. Let's build off of it."
Well, Dan, what did you feel about this band when you joined it? How did you feel you were going to fit in with what Ed was doing? Did you feel like, okay, I'm gonna, my songs really work with his, or I have a different take on it?
No, I mean, it was interesting because before I joined the band, I was doing a lot of extremely overlayered home demos of things that I didn't actually expect to play for anyone, and I hadn't really played live almost ever. I joined the band because I knew Chris and Chris from college, and I really respected them. I thought they were amazing musicians, and I really wanted to just play in a band with them. And I heard Ed's album, I thought it was amazing. So, I mean, I didn't know how it would work. And when we did Yellow House, we really didn't know how it was going to work. But, I mean, it was a lot of these strange home demos actually just kind of collected on a few songs that the band did together. But it was a lot of this kind of weirdly overlayered stuff that we just tried to see how it would work together. And then the process of playing that stuff live and touring more, we kind of started to gel more as a band and developing more of a band sound. So by the time we got to Vecca Timist, it was a lot easier to bring an idea very early on and play it together as a group.
Mm-hmm. The last two albums have both been named after the locations where they were recorded. Did those rooms influence how the songs were written and how they ended up sounding? Is that why? Seemed like pretty profound in terms of the impact they had. That Yellow House, what was it, Ed's mom's house, right? And Vecca Timist. Explain Vecca Timis, because not everybody knows what that means.
It's an uninhabited island off of Cape Cod. We haven't actually been there. We just had spent time in the area. We went from mom's to grandmother's house. I mean, Vecca Timis was recorded in multiple locations, but that was... We had been on Edmund's Hole, which is on the mainland part of Cape Cod, at this like very small little cottage. And we really enjoy recording ourselves with Chris, recording engineer and producer, and doing all his own rig, because it gives us a lot of freedom. And but I don't know. How do you feel about using spaces for recording? I mean, I think we've sort of grown to the point where we like almost need to be in a space.
I feel like a lot of like how the record it comes out sounding is just sort of us hanging out and making food together, and you know, kind of waking up and working on music. And like the album never has like a, we never set out with like a theme in mind, or there's some vague ideas as to kind of directions we might want to take things, but it's all just kind of pretty general. I mean, the album sort of takes shape just in us sort of interacting with one another. So naming it after the space where we did it sort of feels like an appropriate bookend. Nothing more than just sort of like this capsule around the medicine in the pill.
You know? Mm-hmm. You know, the space is so integral. When you take it out of that space and start performing it live, does that change the music a lot for you guys, or in terms of how you want to approach it once you get out of that studio recording environment?
I mean, I think, with most of our songs, like, because there is a lot of layering and sort of multiple vocals happening and different textures and stuff, we always have to sort of readdress a song and find ways of recreating those textures and stuff. And so things change a little bit. I feel like with the new album, stuff that was actually recorded is maybe closer to how we actually sound as a live band. But for Yellow House, some songs were like completely reimagined, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the cool things I remember is that we didn't actually play with a bass for a really long time, and Chris came in with the clarinet and pitch shifted it, and that was like functioning as our bass for like the first couple of tours we did. I mean, now we have a bass, but that was like sort of, we're trying to figure out how to replace instruments that most people would use it with, like pedals and mm-hmm. other things.
Well, clearly something's working. I mean, you guys have played the Pitchfork Festival and Lollapalooza, these giant crowds of people in the parks. This was killing me as I saw it make the round of the blogs. You had Jay-Z and Beyonce at a show last month sitting, and there's like video of it on YouTube, right, of him like really grooving out to you. That's got to be just, what planet did I wake up on this morning, right?
Jay-Z's planet.
Well, we all live on Jay-Z's planet. We're just lucky to be here.
Exactly. Jay-Z's world, we just live in it.
Did he pay to get in? Or do you have him
on
the list?
It's a free show.
Oh, all right. He might be here
Nobody
today
pays.
For all we know. Let's get another song, with or without Jay-Z.
What are you going to play for us?
We're going to play Foreground. It's a little early in the morning, so forgive me if I croak a bit.
Across country, man.
really the brunch set.
Yeah. It feels kind of like a recital. I feel like we're like graduating from
a Sunday morning.
That's good stuff. Foreground from Grizzly Bear. We're here at the House of Blues. You're listening to Sound Opinions at House of Blues with an audience and Grizzly Bear. Guys, it's a treat to have you here. A lot of stuff has happened with the band in the last year. It's got to be a terrific year for you guys in terms of just reaching a broader audience with your music. Los Angeles Philharmonic, you played with in 2008, I believe, right? Radiohead, were involved in a tour with them. Played some shows with Paul Simon. Did you have any interaction with any of the above? And what was that experience like with Simon, Radiohead, and the Philharmonic all in a space of a few months?
It was really crazy. went through multiple layers of just like, I don't deserve this. This is crazy. It's really cool.
Did you ever actually get a chance to talk to, you know, Simon? I mean, did he actually give you some career, pull you aside and son, let me tell you a few things about
the music. Rehearsal space.
He came to our rehearsal space. Yeah. He asked us to play at his concert series thing. And he was like, yeah, I want to stop by and just check out the rehearsal. We're like, okay.
So he just
came.
Sure
he just came and sat there and watched us while we played his songs.
Coached
really
us
nerve-wracking. He was like, "I think that one's working pretty well, but this one, I just don't think you're like really bringing the joy out of it." And we're like, "Okay."
Wow.
Dan, do you know that joy chord that we played? Joy chord, C major. Or, I don't know what it was. Anyway, so
I add a little bit of 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover into this one, boys. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know.
Well, the other thing we have to ask you about collaboration-wise is this new B-side with Michael McDonald, the voice of the. Now, there's much debate here. You know, is this postmodern irony? What is it? But you know, you guys were sound checking that Fender Rhodes, and you were playing Doobie songs.
We are full-on fans.
The thing, joke. It's the kind of thing that I think he's an amazing singer, and though it is, and it's an amazing performance. It's just the reason it feels. It's so unlikely. It's such an unlikely combination that it does. You can't help but. It is just kind of joyful. I mean, it is. I guess it's funny because it's so strange. It's such a strange combination. But he's such an amazing singer, and we really do. I mean, I love some of his songs. He's an amazing songwriter and singer.
I'll just wait out the evening. You're lonely. Need me to drive. Yes, you're lonely. So I'll ask you kindly to make your way. When one was left, a perfect cleft. We all fall from
it. Comes from a good place.
It doesn't come from an ironic.
I remember
really
sitting there, like, kind of just like adding some vocal effects to his vocal, kind of all by myself in the studio. And I was just like, oh, that was a really powerful, powerful. Just listening to stuff over and over again, it hit me like every time. I mean, it's legitimately amazing performance, I think.
But your vocal style, the four of you, could not be further away.
But I wish it were closer. I mean, now I find myself now in shows, I find myself trying to do some of his vocal embellishments just for fun. It's like a way of, I don't know.
So you guys,
I think he did a better performance. I kind of prefer it.
You're gonna break into like an interpolation of "What a Fool Believes" in the middle of one of your songs.
It's
that's
new,
cool.
It's a new bridge. To all your
you were gonna get. Come on, give us.
All right,
that's great.
I got to ask you about those harmonies, though. That it's a big part of this record, the way the voices meld together. As these guys were coming into the band, did you envision that kind of thing happening, Ed? Or was that something that just, oh, hey, these guys can really sing. Let's figure out a way to use this.
I didn't actually think, no, I didn't know there was going to be like a four singers. But then it's like when each person comes and then you're like, oh, here's a part. It would be really cool. And then someone tries that. And you know, as I was getting to know everyone and we're all getting to know each other, we all realized that we can sing together.
And it's also cool, and when we first met, that you know, you had with Horn and Plenty, there was this really interesting like style of layering vocals that was make these very unlikely harmonies that I'd never heard. And when I would try to do harmonies at home, it was all this very like layered, arranged kind of style, and kind of melding that, and then all the band kind of jumping in on it for, and it just really worked. It was like a funny coincidence that we were both kind of experimenting with that kind of thing. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Cool stuff. You guys are on a tight schedule today. We got to get you out of here, but we'd love you to play
our last song.
Another song. What have you got for us?
We'll do While You Wait for the others.
You gonna give a little riff at the end?
I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna do as much Michael McDonald embellishment as I can.
While you wait for the others to make it all worthwhile, all your useless pretensions weighing on my time. You could beg for forgiveness as long as you like, or just wait out the evening. You'll only bleed me dry. Yes, you'll only bleed me dry. So I
coming out early.
Thank you.
While You Wait for the Others by Grizzly Bear, much closer to the version on Vecatimus than the McDonald, but you can keep trying, Daniel. Chris, Daniel and Ed, Grizzly Bear, thank you for coming on Sound Opinions.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
To listen to Grizzly Bear's complete live performance, visit soundopinions.org. To comment on our conversation with them or to share any of your critical opinions on the air, call our hotline at 888-859-1800. We're going to take a quick break on Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. And when we return, Greg and I will review the new album from metal giants Slayer. Plus, it will be Greg's turn to drop a quarter into the Desert Island Jukebox. Back to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. If you were being lulled by Grizzly Bear in our last segment, well, wake up. That is Slayer on Sound Opinions with a track called American from their new album World Painted Blood, the 10th studio album. Slayer emerged in the early to mid 80s and quickly became one of the four cornerstone bands of speed or thrash metal, along with Megadeth, Metallica, and Anthrax, and I think even the most devoted fans of any of those groups would say Slayer were the most extreme.
Mm-hmm.
They quickly raised the ire of the censors of the world, the Parents Music Resource Center. Tipper Gore, shocked by the satanic lyrics and the songs about mass murder. In fact, you know, Slayer were always kind of portraying these horror stories, much like Stephen King would, in song. And it didn't matter much anyway, because Tom Araya's famous Cookie Monster growl, you could barely tell what he was singing about anyway. The appeal of Slayer has always been the hit you right between the eyes impact of a sledgehammer to the head, you know? Mm-hmm. How do you keep that up for two decades? Have they done it the 10th time they've gone into the studio? World Painted Blood arrived, my review copy, Greg, in a biohazard bag. That's always a good sign. And there are four different album covers floating out there. If you put them all together, you get a map of the world made out of skulls and covered with dripping blood. Yes, topical stuff. Several of the songs on this new album, Greg, as the cover might indicate, are political. Slayer is talking about religious fanaticism changing the world. This is one of the old-fashioned, non-political horror story songs. It's called Beauty Through Order, and it's the tale of a Hungarian countess, Elizabeth Bathory, who murdered young virgins in the villages she oversaw, drained them of their blood, and bathed in it to preserve her youth and beauty. I honestly am not making that up. It was an inspiration when Bram Stoker wrote Dracula. So here is the Mighty Slayer with a little bit of a horror story on Sound Opinions.
It's the beat of your blood. To drink.
Beauty Through Order from Slayer, its 10th studio album, World Painted Blood. Jim, as you mentioned, this band got in a lot of trouble with the Tipper Gores of the world in the 80s, the Blue Bloods, who were seeing all sorts of satanic imagery and saying, naughty, naughty, can't do that, a warning sticker on the album cover. Now, some of the shock tactics have worn off a bit. I mean, we kind of know what Slayer is going to sing about before they even start.
Yeah.
There's going to be a song about damning of organized religion, and there's going to be some depictions of torture, and there's going to be a political rant, as we played at the top with Americon. I mean, we kind of know the subject matter already. What we're left with, once the shock tactics are gone, is a great band. I would argue one of the great American rock bands of the last 30 years. Forget about genre. And we're back to the original lineup, which I think is really key.
Yeah.
Dave Lombardo has been in and out of the band as a drummer. This man is an unbelievable drummer. And it's interesting to me how the drums have sort of been mixed higher in this record. It's almost like a lead instrument in a lot of ways, right alongside the guitars of Kerry King and Jeff Hanneman. Araya, too, you pointed out that the Cookie Monster vocals. I actually hear some more actual singing on this record.
Yeah, he's trying to sing more, yeah.
The last few records have been more built around speed and just that huge aggression that they're able to muster. On this record, I hear more texture and melody. It's another fine Slayer record. I don't think you can go wrong with this band right now. The last three or four records have been really good after some rough spots in the 90s. So I'm buy it all the way on World Painted Blood.
I will agree, Greg. This is a buy it record. Obviously, it is not for everybody. But I have told many people, more even than the records, you know, go see Slayer live sometime.
Yeah.
That there, even if you think you don't like this genre, there is an undeniable appeal of, like, you know, doing that thing where you lay on the hood of your car at the end of a runway and the jets take off. You know what I mean? And every molecule of your body vibrates. That's Slayer. You need a little bit of that in your life. Buy it.
I tell you, little buddy, this whole island is bewitched.
Remember, we were shipwrecked together.
As often as possible here on Sound Opinions, we like to take a trip to the desert island and play a song from the jukebox for you that we can't live without. Mr. Cott, what have you got?
Jim, I've been thinking about some way to honor one of my favorite bands of the 90s on the occasion of the 10th anniversary of a very tragic event, the death of the band's lead singer and founder. That would be Mark Sandman of a band called Morphine. Sandman died at the age of 47 in 1999. So now we have the 10th anniversary of his death. Morphine has been celebrated with some posthumous recordings trickling out over the last few years. I think those studio records they made in the 90s, though, are still the core of their legacy, and I want to go back and play a track off one of their best albums called Yes from 1995. This band consisted of Sandman on two-string bass, Billy Conway on drums, and Dana Colley on baritone saxophone. They specialized in something they called, with a very tongue-in-cheek kind of attitude, low rock. You know, all these low sounds in the sonic spectrum. This was at a time when grunge was happening and alternative rock, and then you had these really sad second- and third-hand grunge bands all ripping off the style that started in Seattle. You know, the Bushes of the world and the Seven Mary Threes. Morphine stood outside all of that. They had a unique sound, all their own, really hasn't been duplicated before or since in a lot of ways. And it consisted of that very minimalist approach to the music, more atmospheric, as much atmospheric as melodic, and Sandman's brilliant lyrics. He was heavily influenced by pulp novelists like Jim Thompson. Say only enough to say exactly what you mean, and no more and no less. So his songs kind of painted around the fringes of this narrative, and you got into some really creepy moods with, with what he was singing about. I love this band. They created a great sense of groove, sometimes up-tempo, sometimes more sensual and atmospheric, and with the lyrics created little mini-movies. I mean, if they were to make videos, and I know they did, but I think every one of them should have been in black and white, and there should have been some guy with a fedora smoking a cigarette in the corner, and he's telling you the story. Here's one of their best songs. It's called Radar, in honor of the late Mark Sandman on Sound Opinions.
Got to the driver of my car, past the dogs, past the guards, and all of my alarms. Supposed to be so state of the art. You penetrate my radar. You penetrate my radar. You drop a bomb in my backyard. You penetrate my radar. Chess game, and now you say checkmate. While you go running freely, spending money every place. And me, I got to hide, and I don't dare to show my face. If I'm guilty, so are you. It was March 4th, 1982. Got all the time in the world to spare.
That was Radar by Morphine on Sound Opinions, my partner Greg Kot's Desert Island Jukebox pick for the week. Greg, what do we have on the show next week?
Next week, Jim, progressive rock. We look at the dawn of progressive rock, the big bands, the King Crimsons, the Yeses, the ELPs, the Genesises, and we're going to give you a sense of why this genre exists and why it still thrives.
Good stuff. This week, Grizzly Bear was recorded for us live at the House of Blues in Chicago by Dan Dietrich and the crew from Wall to Wall Studios. And as always, our ace production team was the freaky but friendly Robin Lynn and Jason Saldana. And of course, our executive producer, our fearless leader, the sort of male version of Countess Bathory, Tori Southside Malagia. On Sound Opinions, everyone's a critic. Now it's time to hear what you have to say.
I'm in the phone with this one across the hall. If you don't answer, I'll just ring it on the wall. I know she's there, but I just had a call. Don't leave me hanging on the telephone. Don't leave me hanging on the telephone.
New messages.
Hi, this is Tom from Milwaukee. I'm calling about your scary songs feature. One scary song that I've always liked is The Gift by Velvet Underground. It's obscure. It's hard to listen to. In one ear, you hear a droning guitar, and in the other ear, you hear this vocal story, which is really pretty macabre, where a guy mails himself to his girlfriend. She doesn't really care about him anymore, and she kills him while opening the box.
Inside the package, Waldo was so transfixed with excitement that he barely breathed. His skin fell quickly from the heat, and he could feel his heart beating in his throat. It would be soon. Sheila stood quite upright and walked around to the other side of the package. Then she sank down to her knees, grasped the cutter by both handles, took a deep breath, and plunged the long blade through the middle of the package, through the masking tape, through the cardboard, through the cushioning, and right through the center of Waldo Jeffers' head, which split slightly and caused little rhythmic arcs of red to pulsate gently in the morning sun.
It's pretty weird, and I really like it. So I thought you might like that. Great show. Love it. Bye-bye.
Long about an hour before sunrise,
She drags his body down to the edge of the swollen river, wrapped in a red velvet curtain, stolen from the movie theater where she works. Quiet as a whisper, under the stanchions of a washed out bridge, she cuts him loose and watches as the floodwaters spin him round once and carry him away.
Hi, this is Mike from Cleveland, Ohio. Just finished listening to your Scary Songs webcast and had to add a couple. In the murder ballad category, would love to add Jim White's The Wound That Never Heals. Great song about a black widow, and it's just so enhanced by White's just totally detached delivery. Now, on the soundtracks, if you've got the old Quake 1 game CD, pull it out, put it in your CD player, and go to track 2 and start Trent Reznor's soundtrack for the game. You put your speakers outside in your bushes and keep the volume way low, trick-or-treaters will stop in the middle of your driveway and wonder what the heck is going on. Great effect. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Hi, my name is Eric Murphy. I'm calling from Aiden, North Carolina. I was just listening to your show about scariest rock songs, and I was shouting, you know, you gotta play My Mind's Playing Tricks on Me by Ghetto Boys. You guys didn't fail me and played it. I wish you had played the last verse, Bushwick Bills, because what was so sort of freaky about the song to me is, you know, the video and knowing, you know, Bushwick Bills was a little person, and he was dressed up, you know, for Halloween, and this year, Halloween fell on a weekend. Me and Ghetto Boys are trick-or-treating, robbing little kids for bags until that omen got behind us. It's a great song, man. Scary song. Thanks for playing it. Love your show. Take care.
This year, Halloween fell on a weekend. Me and Ghetto Boys are trick-or-treating, robbing little kids for bags till that omen got behind our rags. So we speeded up the pace, took a look back, and he was right before our face. We were in for a squab, no doubt. So I swung and tried to take him out. He was going down, we planned, but this wasn't no ordinary man. He stood about 6 or 7 feet. Now that's the creep I be seeing in my sleep.
So we tripled. No more messages.
To give us your opinion on Sound Opinions, call our hotline, 1-888-859-1800. We'll be back next week with Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media.
This week on RVER, sponsored by Progressive Insurance. I'm sorry, I can't operate on that vehicle.
But doctor, you took an oath.
That RV, it's my son's RV.
Oh, doctor, isn't there anything you
can do? I'm not a miracle worker, Sheila. I'm an RV surgeon, trained to save the lives of large injured recreational vehicles, which is definitely a real profession.
When your RV really needs saving, Progressive has you covered. See if you could save with a leader in RV insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Covered subject to policy terms.